Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Coming up on this week's show, Ofcom say and Channel 4 pays. Can the broadcaster draw a line under its troubled year after the regulator hits it with a £1.5 million fine over its faked phone-ins? And troubles in Podland, we ask what's next for Danny Baker after he pulls the plug on his internet comedy show. Also in the programme, another X Factor voting row and a U-turn by Radio 1. Plus, we get out our highlighter pens and pore over this year's festive TV lineups. This is Media Talk from Guardian Unlimited. It's our final show before Christmas, a slightly shorter one at that. There's a last-minute Christmas shopping to be done, after all. On the panel this week, Maggie Brown, media commentator for The Guardian and author of A License to Be Different, The Story of Channel 4. Is it sprouts or no sprouts for you, Maggie, at Christmas?
Lots of sprouts.
Lots of sprouts, I thought so. Over in the red corner, it's Santa Steve Hewlett. Do we get a festive ho-ho-ho from you?
Ha ha ha.
More from Maggie and Steve in just a moment. Let's kick things off this week, though, with everyone's favourite TV couple.
Hi, thanks for staying with us in just a moment. The very latest on those terrorist plans to blow up to 10 transatlantic jetliners out of the sky.
But first, we're going to play You Say We Pay, as we always do. So let's go straight to David from London, who knew that Charlie Dimmock helped Alan Titchmarsh and Tommy Walsh in Ground Force.
Hello, not Twin David. Peaks.
No. Hello, no. David.
Yeah, hello, Judy.
Oh, Mr. Cool.
That's an interesting voice. How are you?
Yeah, all right. You know, a bit mashed.
Where are you calling from, David?
London.
Which part? Plumstead. OK, right. Well, you sound very cool.
I'm so mashed.
You sound it. You sound very under control.
Yeah.
So, be a good actor.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to give you 1 minute to get as much as you can. We'll be as quick as we can. We're both allowed to cheat once. At least that's what we allow ourselves. You have 1 minute. David, your time starts now.
Well, that's a spoof, of course, but you get the idea. Now, our top story this week is this news that Ofcom has fined Channel 4 £1.5 million over misconduct in the phone-in competitions on two of its flagship shows. Richard and Judy's You Say We Pay and Noel Edmonds' Deal or No Deal were deemed by the regulator to have fallen foul of the broadcasting code. GMTV was also fined £2 million for its part in the phone-in scandals. Its chief executive, Paul Cawley, has already resigned. Channel 4 said it accepted Ofcom's ruling and is donating £600,000 to charity. It'll also begin legal proceedings against the phone service operator Echo to recover some of the costs from You Say We Pay. Steve, what is Ofcom saying about the rules that Channel 4 broke?
Well, in effect, whereas GMTV involved more money and a degree of editorial lassitude that was identifiable. I mean, not that anybody knew that it was happening, but that it existed right in the middle of the company. They were culpable, albeit for errors of omission. In the case of Channel 4, this is, in some sense, a slightly weaker finding, I think, in the sense that they're not accusing Channel 4 really of having done anything other than them be responsible for the broadcasting codes being broken. They're, if anything, I think saying that they're less responsible, if anything, than GMTV were. They knew less about it. Look, no less ready to take the cash, of course. And I think we're talking here in terms of revenues from these things. I don't mean revenues from competitions that were all botched. Quite a lot of it was, maybe questionable, but was legitimate. And their revenues overall were something 25 million quid. There's quite a lot of cash involved, not all of which was fraudulently or improperly taken. But the numbers are quite large.
So GMTV was fined £2 million.
Remember, the maximum fine is 5% of NAR, net advertising revenue.
Yeah.
In the case of GMTV, £2.5 million would have been the full fine. It was discounted, I understand, because the company took strenuous measures. The chief executive left, other people were dismissed. They were seen to be sort of dealing with it.
So
in Channel 4's case, £1.5 million, given that their net advertising revenue is somewhere up around the £800 million, this is a much, much, much smaller deal in that sense.
Maggie Brown, you've written about Channel 4 this year in in the book of yours, and it's been a bad year, the 25th year for Channel 4.
Very bad year, yeah.
Do you think this now, they'll be hoping at Channel 4 that this draws a line under it?
Well, they certainly will. And to some extent, you would think that it has done, because they've already announced they're not going to be renewing Richard and Judy's contract after next year. It has one more year to go. They're actively looking for a replacement for the 5 o'clock slot to share with Paul O'Grady. It's not an insignificant fine. This is an awful lot of money, even if it's not as severe as the GMTV fine. No broadcaster will ever want to put themselves in this position again. They've already announced, when they brought out their annual results in May, they announced that they were going to be much more strict on the compliance front. They wouldn't take the word of a third party as they had done with Echo. They would have physical checks. So I think that the whole of the tightening up of the regime, and in any way, they seem to have more or less exited from premium phone line competitions as well. All of this adds up, yes, to a rather, you might say, nasty big punctuation point at the end of 2007. But they'll be obviously hoping that they can draw a line under it and go on to whatever 2008 brings.
With these two rulings this week, on top of that, Steve, Ofcom have made another move in that they've written to the Secretary of State, James Purnell, saying some rather interesting things.
James Purnell asked the question, did they have enough powers and were they appropriately organised to deal with issues of trust in TV? That from the government saying that to the regulator. They've responded this week saying sort of, but perhaps not quite. It's all rather detailed stuff. But in it is a very, very significant paragraph where they are in effect demanding that ITV should hand over all the hitherto unpublished elements of the Deloitte report that they commissioned into their own PRS activity and any other information that might be relevant on programmes that might be affected by any PRS jiggery-pokery. Now, in layman's terms, that means, and I'm fed up of having to say, even I am fed up of saying this, they're going to have to audit the X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, yeah. And they're going to have to check that the votes cast corresponded with the programme outcome, which they have conspicuously and steadfastly declined to do. It's impossible to avoid the conclusion that that's because it gets far too close to the talent.
And the talent being
Simon Cowell, Anton Deck, and the network of commercial relationships, which are absolutely... I mean, look, I've worked in this business. I'm sorry, I don't mean that sounds rather silly, doesn't it? You know that.
Yes.
But you know, in this kind of PRS business, these networks of relationships whereby the talent, the production company and Uncle Tom Cobley and all share, you know, in the PRS revenues, that's the thing that made them so attractive.
Yeah, because they were producers.
Companies went so mad for PRS revenues, as well as ITV trying to replace its ad revenues, is because they at least got to share them.
PRS being premium rate services.
Yeah.
Maggie,
it's because, you see, Richard and Judy were producers of their own show, so therefore they were getting an extra fee on top of all the rest of it. So they weren't just getting a fee for being the talent. This is why it goes to the heart of these relationships, and it's a very, very dangerous moment for ITV.
And that's why ITV, not having looked at programmes which involve, you know, big talent who quite properly and quite rightly, you know, are cut in for shares of this, who have direct commercial interests, and production companies with the same, having not looked at these things, leaves ITV wide open to the suggestion that for all that, you know, they try to persuade us they've got their house in order, that they really can't say that with any credibility. This letter from Ofcom is in effect saying is, you better sort it out and tell us.
Maggie, you were just saying there that you think it's a dangerous moment for ITV.
Well, I think that they don't seem to be anywhere near resolution on this. So therefore, unlike Channel 4, which at least appears to have said, right, that's it, and in fact pulled out quite quickly, this is going to be overhanging ITV in what should be, let's face it, a really big year for ITV, because they're about to launch a quite new, fresh schedule, or so we're told. I know it looks the same if they're putting News at 10 back at 10. But nonetheless, there's a whole raft of changes coming through into ITV. It's make or break year for ITV after a reasonably good, for them, 2007.
You just need to consider just how, in terms of how bad this could be for ITV. One doesn't, you know, I don't wish them ill, far from it. But, you know, the GMTV thing was quite a big fine because the company were clearly culpable, albeit for errors of omission. The Channel 4 fine's an awful lot lower by comparison with its in relation to the ad revenues, because they thought, well, they weren't that culpable. In ITV's case, we already know about some programmes which had competitions you couldn't win built into the format.
Mm. Do you think, Maggie, that broadcasters have got something of a mountain to climb if they want to regain viewers' trust in 2008 that was lost in 2007?
Well, quite clearly they do. But that doesn't seem to stop people wanting to vote. I mean, having said all of that, you have to look at the way that people have been piling in to vote for Strictly Come Dancing and The X Factor. So, I mean, you can get a little bit carried away with it too.
As always, we want to know what you think. You can post your comment on the Media Talk blog at Orkin Grinder, or, of course, on our wall on our Facebook group. But remember, don't phone in. It's just for fun. I'm Matt Wells. You're listening to Media Talk. Still to come, we'll go through the highlights of this year's Christmas TV lineup. Plus,
what a week! What a week! What a bombshell! What a week! What a week!
Yes, a bombshell indeed. We'll discuss what's next for Danny Baker after his fallout with Whippet. That's all coming up. But first, let's round up the rest of the winners and losers from around the media village with Good Week, Bad Week.
It's been another bad week for BBC Radio after they received widespread criticism for censoring the word faggot in the Christmas classic Fairy Tale of New York. The Beeb's language police said Kirsty MacColl's line, "You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap lousy faggot," might offend some listeners on Radio 1. It all ended with a grovelling apology from Andy Parfitt, and the song will play without edits. Strangely, they never had a problem with the word arse. It's not been the best of weeks for the Financial Times either, after Charlie Pretzlick, once touted as a future editor of the FT, announced he's to leave journalism and become a banker. Could be worse, he might have become an estate agent. Richard Desmond's been having a tough time of it. His Portland TV business, home to channels like Television X and Red Hot, has delayed its planned £200 million stock market flotation until at least the second half of 2008. It's down to difficulties in the financial markets, apparently. And neither Satanta nor Des Lynam are laughing this week after they fell foul of the ASA. 34 viewers complained about the sexist content in their latest campaign. And finally, some positive news. It's been a good week for Grammy award-winning British soul singer Joss Stone, who's set to become the new Cadbury's Flake Girl. Well, beats being the Dairy Milk Gorilla.
I love hearing rude words said by people who, with silky smooth voices. Let's pick up on a few of those stories. Steve, what do you make of the BBC's banning and then unbanning of rude words in that Pogue song?
Well, given that it's a Pogue song and it's so well known, I mean, it seems calculated, to cause offence by cutting the words out. I mean, look, you know, I don't. Is that offensive enough to warrant?
Do you know what I heard? Do you know what I heard, Steve? That little bird told me that that the decision to ban it was taken at a relatively middle-ish kind of level, and that Andy Parfitt, and who is the ultimate controller of Radio 1, didn't know about it. And then Leslie Douglas found out, and of course she's playing it on Radio 2. She said that she went to Jenny Abramsky.
So faggot and arse on Radio 2.
She says, this is what she said. Leslie Douglas said to Jenny Abramsky, can you imagine this conversation? That, you know, we play faggots and arses on Radio 2. You can't ban them on
and
Radio 1.
And we play Jonathan Ross after
exactly.
all. You'll be very blue, yes.
So that's all a bit of a BBC cock-up, funnily enough.
They do that. I was watching Jonathan Ross on TV just for a complete diversion on last Friday evening. When he asked an interviewee why, when he spoke to people, he always looked like he was sucking somebody off.
Oh,
did you see that?
Honestly, this is I didn't see that.
Extraordinary.
Anyway,
so back to faggots.
We might have to censure Steve.
Let's stick to what we know. Eh?
Let's stick to what we know, exactly. All right. The other thing that I wanted to pick up on, which wasn't in that roundup there, was the Competition Commission ruling on the Sky stake in ITV, Steve. What do you think are the implications of what they've said?
Well, on the face of it, you know, Sky paid $940 million or something for the stake when they bought it.
Which was about 18-19%, something like that.
Or, it was 17.9%.
Right, okay.
135p a share.
That's right. The share price is now down at 83 pence, 84 pence.
That wasn't a very good investment then, was it?
Well, it wasn't, although, interestingly, the reason that the share price has declined since they bought it, but the thing that brought about the catastrophic or the precipitate decline from 110, 112 to 80-something was ITV chairman Michael Grade saying that they wanted ITV to dispose, Sky to be forced to dispose of the whole lot. It's when the market had to consider what happened, that they might have to buy 20%, near enough, 18% of ITV's stake coming onto the market in one go. That's what caused them to reprice it down. It was ITV's statement that caused the share price to decline quite as it has. In the short term, Sky are being forced to sell two-thirds of it. It's going to cost, so that's worth, what, 200 and something million. That's quite a lot of money. Is it worth frustrating Virgin Media's takeover of ITV? Well, actually, me think it's money well spent, although quite why they were so worried about Virgin and ITV, you know, two failing companies together, more likely to make a bigger failing company. Two wrongs said not to make a right, not even in business. So, but they were clearly concerned about it, and to that extent, you might think it was money well spent. The longer-term consequence, I think, is going to be that this now puts ITV back in play acquisition-wise.
Most definitely.
And remember that before the upside of Sky stake for ITV initially was that it stabilised the company, which companies under constant bid pressure are almost impossible to run. You've got all your executives looking left, right and centre, worried about their jobs, and all people care about is bids. When Sky came in at 135, that put the lid on that. Nobody was going to trump them. As a result, ITV and Michael Grade have had real stability ever since. That's about to end.
So, Maggie, you think now that the vultures will be circling around ITV?
I know. I was at an event, a Christmas event, and there were a lot of people who you might say have an interest in this, and that was exactly what the talk was about, that it would now be subject to some, in the coming year, some form of takeover bid. It may even be, although who knows what is going to happen in the financial markets, it could even be taken private, which might actually be the best thing for ITV, because to have a company like this directly subjected to the stock exchange is not really very helpful. Well, I mean, look at Channel 5. If Channel 5 was on the stock market, it would be in a terrible state. The fact it's kind of...
It is in a terrible state.
It's protected by being part of a bigger group now, actually, is a material fact, because RTL could pull something out of the hat and rescue it.
Well, it isn't. You're absolutely right. It doesn't. Its whole reputation, everything about it, is not dependent upon this week's PR. Hmm. And being a public company means that you're exposed, to public scrutiny.
But if I'm right, then although the share price is only 82, 83p now, a really historic low, it could well go up after the stake is in place, but only a bit.
Remember, the faintest hint of a slowdown, the first thing that goes is TV advertising. ITV's revenues are quite... They've had a good year this year. The revenues are quite likely to be down next year. And remember, because ITV can't contract their costs on a very short timescale, because they've paid for the programmes they're all waiting to be shown, every pound of ad revenue that doesn't come is a pound off the bottom line.
OK, well, obviously, you'll be able to follow this story on mediaguardian.co.uk. I'm sure we'll be first with the bid news. Just before we move on, Steve, you were on the show last week, and we were talking about the digital radio ad... which has made some play this week with over 100 complaints to the BBC. Well, actually, what people have been doing, Steve, is there's a telephone number at the end of the ad, and so they've been phoning up.
And people think they can buy radio.
Trying to buy radio.
Wrong.
Underlines the point that you were making.
Well, it looks for all the world like an advert for radio sets. Which it sort of is. I mean, I don't think it's wrong for the BBC to promote digital services and digital take-up. And they've done it in TV, and I don't mind doing it in radio. And as we said last week, promoting their own services, I'm all in favour. That's all to the good.
But this is an ad for a product.
Not only is it looks and feels like an ad for a product, even though, strictly speaking, it possibly isn't. But that just goes with, you do worry about them kind of slightly losing the plot on where they draw their own lines. Leave aside what they're, strictly speaking, allowed to do or should or shouldn't do, they're losing the plot slightly, in terms of what they think they can advertise.
It's dangerous territory for the BBC, isn't it? Because the critics of the BBC say you're being too commercial, and this makes them look like a commercial organisation. So people will just say, well, why don't you just be a commercial organisation, Maggie?
Well, they're not, are they?
No.
So, I mean, I don't think we can really hang them on one misjudged advert, quite frankly.
OK, so this is someone to defend the BBC. Yeah. Very good. Excellent. A bit of balance.
But what about Robinson?
Hang on a second. I know we've done all that.
Blah,
let's,
blah, blah.
Let's move on. For the best news and analysis of the worlds of print, let's move on now. For the best... Stop it! I was trying to do it so that we didn't have coughing. You cough.
It's Christmas, sorry.
OK. OK, let's move on. For the best news and analysis from the worlds of print, broadcast and online, remember to go to mediaguardian.co.uk.
Come on, let's do something. What were we doing Friday?
We were doing aprons on Friday.
Yeah, look at the twist.
Great aprons.
No point doing the slippery map of London. We know where the slipperiest place in London is now. Don't we see Rathbone Place? OK, welcome everyone. Oxford Street is just, it's so cold. The good dedicated autograph hunters who stand outside here hoping anyone will come through are standing there like cartoon style, blowing onto their hands and stamping from foot to foot. That's dedication.
I thought I saw a snowflake or two today in Wapping. I don't know whether I was imagining it. Maybe it is.
Maybe it's falling from my heart. Who knows? It's very icy right there.
Well, Danny Baker is clearly not a happy man. Love him or hate him, he's one of Britain's most talented and innovative broadcasters. In May, the BBC London presenter launched a series of podcasts, paid-for podcasts, describing them as the future of audio. This week, though, he announced that his all-day breakfast show and Baker and Kelly, and that's the football podcast that he does with Danny Kelly, were coming to a sudden and abrupt end following a rather public row with Whippet, which is the downloads site that distributes the programmes and collects the money. Baker Baker seems to have got something of a track record of falling out with his bosses, of course, and he and Paul Myers, that's the head of Whippet, have been engaging in a very public war of words on their respective blogs. We tried to get Danny Baker on to talk to us, but as he explained in an email, he thought he'd better stay mum. His voice will, of course, be read out by an actor.
Thanks for your interest in what I think we can now safely call the Whippet debacle. I'd love to let off some of this high-pressure steam currently raging within, but calmer heads than mine are urging me to become strong and silent while they groat through the proper channels. Better stop now. I can feel my inner boiler starting to buckle once more.
Well, let's find out a bit more about this. Matt Hall is a radio and podcasting consultant, former head of BBC Radio Production for something else. And in fact, he's currently doing a bit of consultation for us here at The Guardian, which is why he's in the studio now. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Well, this is very interesting, isn't it? Because as I said there, Danny Baker declared quite publicly that this was the future of radio podcasting, paid for podcasting.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that even as late ago as last month, Paul Myers, the head of Whippet, was standing up at a Radio Academy event, Radio on the Edge, saying that this was still the way forward.
And what's happened here? It seems to be a problem. Well, it's a money issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that, I mean, when Danny Baker stood up at the radio festival in the summer, the podcast was still free. Subscription was free. The problem has been when subscriptions started to be paid for. And the deal was that for £2 a week, you could get three of the all-day breakfast shows. And the problem seems to be that Baker and his cohorts haven't seen any money for it. And the other problem seems to be, talking to people, that actually he was funding the whole thing. They were actually paying for studio time. They were paying for the production staff. So actually it wasn't just he wasn't getting any profit out of it. He was actually losing money on it.
Well, it's hard to divine what's true and what's not, and where the money has gone or where it might not have gone. So let's...
Other problem, of course, is that Whippet have never actually indicated how many people have subscribed. Mm. And although they're available through iTunes, there has been a problem with Whippet's delivery system going through iTunes.
So the broader issue, I guess, is it possible for someone, even with a bigger name and a big following like Danny Baker, to make money out of this kind of thing, out of podcasting?
I mean, the smart money would definitely say no. I think Danny Baker's two problems with
this. Or at least to make money out of charging for it.
Yeah, I mean, there are two problems with this. Unlike Ricky Gervais, who's been the model that everyone holds up as being successful in terms of subscription podcasting, Danny Baker's shows are infinite. There's not just a short series of them, so you don't know how much you're going to carry on paying. The other problem, of course, the big problem that nobody seems to have kind of figured out in the Whippet or the Danny Baker organisation is that you can very easily, as I have just done, go onto the BBC London site and a week of Danny's shows are available to listen for free. So if you want to get your fill of Danny Baker, you can do it quite easily.
And it's not just Danny Baker. The BBC has more than 100 podcasts. The Guardian does a whole load of them. Other people, there's loads of stuff out there for free. So if you're one of the few people that's charging, that's quite a hard sell to people who have got such a big choice of free stuff out there.
I think it's a really difficult bridge to get over because there is, as you say, there's so much content out there for free. Why on earth would you pay for it?
Going back to Danny Baker and Whippet, I mean, it's marvellous, isn't it? Because Danny Baker and Whippet themselves have been giving all their different sides of the story all over their various websites.
Well, it's fantastic. It's a kind of spat for those that like this sort of thing.
And we love them.
It's a spat being conducted in public on Danny Baker's Appreciation Facebook group, on Danny Baker's own website. But Paul Myers is actually avoiding contact with the regular media. You know, it's quite an entertaining way to play it out.
Thanks for that, Matt. If you're a Baker and Kelly subscriber, anxious for your weekly football fix, you could do a lot worse than check out our very own Football Weekly podcast, number one sports show on the iTunes charts, you know. James Richardson and the team are here every Monday and Thursday. Go to guardian.co.uk/podcasts for more. Now, if there's one thing as integral to the Christmas experience as Granny having too much avocar, a blazing family row and the heating breaking down, my heating broke down this week actually, it's sitting on the sofa and watching crap TV. Now, listen, our usual TV reviewer, Gareth McLean, is having some curtains or a fridge delivered. You know how it is. So Steve and Maggie are here to guide us through the best and worst things on the idiot box while I ease that festive, bloated feeling. And Maggie, I see that you've got the TV Times.
I went to bed with it last night. And in fact, I'm only here here because I managed to get my new carpet put down this morning by the carpet
Good.
Layers finally. So that just reads
why,
me
why does everyone have carpets delivered over Christmas?
Oh, because I'm having my family descending on me.
I don't think everybody does, do they?
Well, that's
what I've been doing.
I had John Lewis around this morning to measure up the curtains, yes. And, and we've had the deck.
I have to say, going back to this issue
of the telly,
there's an awful lot of good programming on this Christmas.
Do you think?
I think there is. And I have this awful sense that I'm going to be fighting. I mean, the problem with Christmas telly is that you're not watching it in kind of your own home with. In your own time, you're watching it with your relatives, and in right. my case, they range from 88 to sort of 14. So there's a lot of consensus stuff, which I think I will be watching. I mean, right. I know on Christmas Day that I will be watching the Strictly Come Dancing Christmas special with the celebrities who've won in the past. I know that I'll be watching the Doctor Who special because we watched it last year. And I know that my mum and dad will want to watch To the Manor Born, the reprise of the...
To the Manor Born? How old is that?
Well, the last one was 1981.
Lord.
And it stars Penelope Keith, and it's all about... And Richard Devere, played by Peter Bowles, and they're... They got married at the end of the last series in 1981, and now we catch up on them in their stately home, or not so stately home, I don't know. But this marks to me of a Peter Fincham legacy, because Peter Fincham, as controller of BBC One, was a great fan of sort of retro TV. You know, he loved, for example, you know, the Royal Family that came back a year or so ago. So, no, I know that's what I'll be watching. Although there'll be a bit of a fight, because on BBC Two there's... lots of Dad's Army type of stuff, and my mum will want to watch carols from King's College in the afternoon. So, no, the other thing that I am really looking forward to is, because I am enjoying Oliver on BBC One at the moment, the Charles Dickens adaptation, which has been stripped and stranded a bit like Bleak House 2 years ago.
Mixed reviews from the
I know.
Reviewers, though.
I think that the reviews are completely wrong.
Not from my 12-year-old.
No.
Oh, fantastic.
And yeah. my children are just lapping it up. In fact, remembering to watch it, which is
yeah,
pretty
that's
good.
Unusual.
Unusual. And Sky Plusing it, in my case.
If it's not Top Gear in our house, it's very
yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of stuff. You know, if you want the latest episodes of Robbie the Reindeer, that's on Christmas Day too.
There's also All-Star Family Fortunes.
All-Star
thank
Family,
excellent.
Yeah.
Thank God for that.
Five films on BBC One in sequence. Which day is it? Is it Boxing Day?
That's Christmas
absolutely
Day,
incredible. Yeah.
Well, actually, I can trump you all because I've seen the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Ah, you went to the party.
I went to the party at the Science Museum in London, star-studded affair.
Well, you were there.
It was very odd, actually. Peter Hain,
yeah.
Cabinet Minister, Andrew Marr.
Yeah.
And his kids? No, I didn't see his kids. No. And a Hollyoaks actress. It was very odd. Anyway. Oh,
and the dinosaurs, presumably.
But no Kylie.
What, all in the TARDIS together?
No. This is in the audience watching it.
Oh, it's not a story, then.
But no Kylie. No Kylie.
She's probably doing something. She's always busy, isn't she?
She was probably busy. But I shan't spoil the ending.
Is it worth watching, though?
But yes, it is worth watching.
Are.
It's very good.
The Titanic, isn't it?
Yes. It's called The Titanic. It's basically a remake of the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Which is
no bad thing. And it's much better, and it's good for that. Yeah. Kylie Minogue, not so good.
Catherine Tate.
No, she's not.
She was in last.
She was in the last one, then she's coming back as the assistant.
The Runaway Bride. That's yeah. right. Yes.
But anyway, yes. So I would say it's definitely worth watching. Steve, what's family? What's Christmas Day like at the Hewlett household?
Well, if it all goes well, the afternoon is spent asleep. I looked at Maggie's TV Times here, bloody Top of the Pops is still there.
Is it?
Half past one.
My childhood, as long as I can remember,
it was watch Top of the Pops before, just before Christmas.
I mean, what really happens at Christmas is that the BBC just casts off all pretenders to be anything other than an entertaining channel, and it just throws itself at Christmas, and so you get everything, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean, everything that you might want to watch. What you then find is that ITV and certainly Channel 4 start coming back round about December the 30th. So that's when Shameless is being launched and their new stuff is being
I imagine the Maggie Brown household, you'll be watching the Queen's Christmas Christmas message in HD, of course.
We will not be watching it in HD because we don't have our HD set.
Oh, but Sony, are you listening? Mackie Brown hasn't got HD.
I've got an HD set, but
oh no, this will be a problem because we always have our lunch very late. So, and my husband is allergic to the Queen's speech. So, but my mum will insist on watching it. So I think we'll be doing a bit of Sky Plusing because we can catch up with it later. Can't we? You can indeed.
If you want now, if you have anything to say on anything that we've discussed today, remember go to the Organ Grinder blog or leave a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be back on December the 28th with our review of the highlights and lowlights of the year. There's no rest for the wicked in the Guardian podcast department. We'll also have a look ahead to 2008. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Have a very happy Christmas.
Guardian Unlimited.